Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
These are players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Good afternoon. Good evening. Welcome to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, editor of Tiger Rag, with Tiger Rag executive editor and financial expert Todd Horn. Read the latest issue of Tiger Rag, the money issue. Show me the money. That's what that magazine does. That's what that issue does. And our great producer, Andre, how do you pronounce his last name, Todd?
Champagne.
Champagne. Champagne. Say it for us, Andre.
But it is champagne.
Well, it's hot outside. It's getting to be baseball season and NCAA tournament season.
Does that mean the baseball team's gonna start playing?
Maybe the Tigers play tonight at 6:30 against Creighton. Creighton's from Omaha. Maybe the Omaha vibe will rub off on the Tigers, and they'll start hitting the ball. They've never played Creighton. That's amazing. They've been in the same stadium as Creighton quite a few times at Rosenblatt. And
have you ever in your long illustrious career covering,
in which I got fired twice, but go ahead.
Covering LSU baseball? Not really. You mean you've written the authoritative book on LSU baseball under Skip Bertman? You've been covering baseball since the beginning of time, and so what I want to know is
he's three years younger than me.
That's right. So, serious question. Serious. Have you ever seen a more talented group of players slump as badly as this team has against inferior competition?
Maybe probably not with that last part with the RPI. The teams they've played are really low in RPI, and that's why LSU is really low in RPI now. But I can tell you the 2001 Tigers, the 2000 Tigers that won the national championship, they started off 6-5, and they got swept at home by Houston. And Houston was, they're better than like Northeast, but they weren't a baseball Northeastern, but they weren't like a baseball power, but they were pretty good. But they got killed in all three games. And I remember talking to Skip after that, and they were 6-5, and I had put all the stats of those losses in there, and they all reverted back to like the worst teams of the 70s for LSU. And I go in the dugout, and Skip goes, "You think we suck, don't you?" And he was laughing and everything. And, they had a couple of little slumps that year, but nothing like this, you know. This is kind of strange because they're just not hitting other than Jake Brown and Derek Curiel.
What was Jay's comment last week about batting?
He said the take is our best friend.
We're doing better when we don't swing than when we swing, or something to that effect.
Yeah, and that's amazing because the Notre Dame coach, when they were off to an 8-0 start, he said that he'd never seen a team do so well not swinging, you know, because you kind of set the pitcher up to get your right pitch. But what LSU has not been doing that they did do when they went 8-0 is they're not hitting mistakes, according to Jay Johnson, and they're not taking advantage of situations, and they're just not hitting overall. I mean, they're like around 200, 210 over the last several games.
I think it's 206, actually.
Yeah. They just look a little snake bit because sometimes they hit it well and it gets caught, but But, you know, that happens every now and then. This has happened for a series of games. And it's worrisome because if they're hitting like that against these lower teams, you know, when you go into the SEC, you're thinking, uh-oh, it's going to be like 2024 all over again. But the thing is, they really don't play an SEC team that's tearing it up until, like, you know, according to the paper right now, until Ole Miss, like later in the season. Vanderbilt's got a worse RPI than LSU. They're 10-7. So, and it can turn around real quick. But we're going to talk to Kendall Rogers about that at 6:20. He's going to join us, the national baseball writer from D1 Baseball. Then we're going to switch over to the situation with men's basketball to see if Matt McMahon can survive or not. Rudy Macklin, member of the greatest LSU basketball team ever, 45-year anniversary of the 1980-81 Tigers. Rudy's going to join us at 6:30. Then we're going to have Todd Walker on at 7 to talk about LSU's hitting slump. And I think Todd Walker had like maybe one slump in his career, and it was early in Omaha in 93, and he busted out of it like with a grand slam against A&M. But we'll talk to Todd about hitting. He's an expert analyst for ESPN and the SEC Network. And then at 7:30, we're going to talk a little NCAA tournament women's basketball with Reed Darcy of the Advocate.
So the women's basketball is up to number 5, so they're just missing a number 1 seed when the brackets come out according to the rankings. But they played really well again against South Carolina.
Yeah.
I think they've proven that they, you know, could beat them if Mulkey could ever outcoach Dawn Staley.
It's starting to remind me of 1986 with the men when LSU lost 3 times that season to Kentucky. Back then they played twice in a regular season. Then they lost a close game to them in the SEC tournament. Then in Atlanta, in the Southeast Regional, Don Redden and Ricky Blanton beat them. And LSU went to the Final Four. Yeah, Todd's imitating Ricky Blanton running down the court like a stalled airplane, like a winged airplane. But Ricky was great in that game, Ricky and Don. And the late, great Don Redden. And that was one of Kentucky's biggest NCAA tournament losses ever because they were like 31-5.
Yeah.
They were number 1 seed. Everybody thought they were going to win the national championship. And Eddie Sutton lost to Daddy Dale. And Daddy Dale also beat Eddie Sutton in the regional to get to the 81 Final Four.
He beat
Arkansas in the Sweet 16 game,
right?
And then they beat Wichita State to get to the Final Four.
Right, that's correct.
And that was in New Orleans. And Rudy just tore up the place in the Superdome. And if he doesn't hurt his shooting finger, who knows? LSU might have beat Indiana in the national semifinal.
Indiana was always LSU's nemesis in those early years.
Yeah. Well, that was the first one, and then they lost to him in 87 in the regional final. And if Dale had won that game, and he wins that game if Fess Irvin makes a couple of free throws.
I mean, and Nikita Wilson makes that 14, 15-footer.
Well, he didn't get that shot off in time. But yeah, if he'd have got it off a half second earlier, and that Final Four was in New Orleans. So who knows what Dale could have done at a Final Four in New Orleans. But, you know, people forget. Yeah, LSU had a 12-point lead late in that game against Indiana. But, you know, it wasn't all coaching. Bobby Knight got a lucky break when Fess Irvin missed those free throws. And then, you know, when Keith Smart hit the game-winning shot for Indiana to win the title that year, that wasn't a drawn-up play.
Okay, so
just got a rebound and threw it up.
Before we went down that hole into the past we were talking about the comparison between LSU and Kentucky in the 80s.
Right. Sorry.
Versus what
right.
LSU's doing, women are doing against South Carolina
exactly.
Right now. Reminds you of that. So how do you think it could end up?
Because the women have come close to beating South Carolina twice now. They've come close to beating them in the past. And, you know, they just lost to them again in the SEC tournament for the second time this year. So if they get them again, maybe in the national semifinal or in the national championship game, who knows? That's when they might win it. And that would be awesome. That would make up for all those other losses, huh, Andre?
I would think so. I mean, it only takes one time, and if it's in the postseason, that would I would agree with you. I would say that it makes up for all
about three of them at least.
Maybe not all six.
And Andre,
this year for sure.
One of the things you're working on, Andre, is the fact that LSU's best players have not played well when it counts in those two South Carolina losses.
And it's not necessarily that they haven't played well, but it's those two together that haven't played well with each other.
Who's those two?
And those two are Flaje Johnson and Michaela Williams, your two most tenured players that have been at LSU in the past three or four years. So they definitely have to play better as the tournament moves on, because if y'all remember down the stretch, I mean, Angel Reese was a big reason of why LSU won games in the tournament in 23. But it also came from their other veterans. It came from LaDeja Williams. It came from Alexis Morris, right? And they're going to need big games from all their stars, which the way that Mylesia Fulwiley is playing right now, I have no doubt in my mind that she's going to be able to keep it up. But LSU's going to be able to have – they're going to have to be able to get big games from especially Michaela Williams, at least one of those two, because if both of those two are having kind of an off game, it shows you what happened on Sunday. They just can't afford to both have bad games like that, and especially on a consistent basis, because, and like I said, in four of their five losses this year, they have failed to both put up 20 points or more, or 15 points or more.
Those are good points, and I cannot wait to talk to all you guys and, of course, Reed Darcy about it, because I got some loaded questions for him about how this team is, not just those two, but this team is performing in clutch moments all season long, and certainly against South Carolina. But I will say this. I actually think that this LSU women's basketball roster is more talented than South Carolina's roster.
I would agree with that. And not only that, but it gives them, say it gives the Flaje Johnsons and the Michaela Williams a little more margin for error because of that depth. But my thing is that you cannot be so bad to the point where you're kind of rotting on the bench, which is, at one point, Kim just kind of let Michaela go, not Michaela on the bench, but she benched Flaje for a good bit. And in big games like that, you cannot have your senior guard on the bench, especially in a game like the South Carolina game where she scored 21 points against in the last matchup. So you can't have that inconsistency going into March. You have to find, I guess, a medium there where it works between all three of your guards.
Yeah, I think to quote the great Skip Bertman, against South Carolina, LSU has to get through that pressure barrier. That's what Skip used to talk about a lot. You got to get – LSU's been getting to that point, but they haven't quite gotten through it. And maybe they'll get one more chance in a huge game. And I think it's funny. I mean, you can't really point to any coaching issues.
No,
with
Kim I was
in any of, in any of the losses. And even though you're saying she has better players, but they just haven't performed up to snuff. And really, there's only, I don't think you can, the only criticism I ever remember of Kim was when she lost to Iowa in the Elite Eight, she didn't maybe put her best player on Caitlin, or she didn't switch around enough. But it was, it was kind of six of one, half dozen the other. You don't really know. But, it's rarely, if ever, coaching with Kim. So it's just a pressure barrier.
And in fact, in this game against South Carolina, they were in it, all the way through it. Late, still had a chance. Unlike last game during the regular season against South Carolina, where Flaje missed two key free throws with 45 seconds to go, this time Kim burns her last time out, gives them instructions, and they go out on the court, and they don't follow any of the instructions, press, foul, anything that she said to do.
Right.
Yeah, at least that's what she described.
Right, right. Okay, we're gonna have to take our first break, and we're going to come back shortly with Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Spring into action with your East Baton Rouge Parish Public Library. This month, poetry and nature rule. Check out details on their One Book, One Community series featuring poetry anthology, You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. Enjoy live music, free food, and fun for the whole family at the One Book, One Community celebration, We Are Here, a gathering of poets on March 28th, 4 to 8 p.m. Spring into action this March with help from your East Baton Rouge Parish Library. For details, go to ebrpl.com.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn and Andre Champagne with Tiger Rag.
Luke. Just call him Luke.
And we're joined by Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. Kendall, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. I'm here to comfort you guys a little bit.
Yeah, I want to know what you've done with the LSU baseball team.
Man, I'll tell you what, it is weird. You know, we talk about it so much in sports about the team, you know, after the national championship team. And, you know, unfortunately, I do think this club is going to be fine long term. I mean, you know, it's not just because I'm on the show, but like I just kind of am a believer in LSU baseball. Like I just feel like they'll figure things out. But there's no doubt there's some warning signs. I mean, this is a team that, you know, we go back to even last or 2 weeks ago, or I guess it was early last week. You know, the Northeastern game, I'll give you the mulligan because it's a long weekend. You're playing a scrappy Northeastern team on a Monday. They really need the RPI win. But then you go to Louisiana, Lafayette, and then you play the way you did. So after that, you're thinking, okay, two stinkers in a row. Man, this team's going to be on fire. Well, they come out on fire on Friday, and then it's like we're back to the same team the rest of the weekend. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I thought they were kind of over it a little bit on Friday. But, you know, the only thing I'll say, and trust me, I didn't think they played well at all in either of the last two games of that series. But the one thing I will say that maybe is a silver lining is I don't know what the total number was, but it felt like the number of balls that they hit on the screws in that last game were a lot. Like, I thought they had a lot of hard contact. So that tells me that eventually those hits will start falling in. But, I mean, again, there are some serious warning signs with the actual, I say, makeup of this team right now.
Yeah, Kendall, let me ask you about 2024, because the same kind of thing happened. I remember thinking, oh, they lost a couple of games, they'll be fine. But I think what's better about this team is their three weekend starting pitchers, Evans, Cooper, and William Schmidt. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? You think this starting pitching is better than 24?
No, I definitely would agree. You know, the thing about it is Moore and Schmidt have been pretty good. You know, Kaysen over the weekend was really good. 9 strikeouts, no walks. That's a big step forward. So, you know, you're led to this question, okay, the pitching, at least the starting pitching, is coming into form. When will the rest of the team kind of follow suit? And, again, I look at, you know, up and down this lineup, and, you know, I look at guys that, you know, just don't have great numbers right now, and I'm like, I can't imagine that fits. You know, you're looking at, you know, Stephen Milam hitting .250. Seth Dardar, certainly a well-accomplished hitter, hitting .256 after the year he had at K-State last year. You know, Aaron Beedy. Aaron Beedy has gotten a lot of heat. He hasn't been great behind the plate, and he hasn't been great at the plate at times. And so that's a guy, for me, I think, for LSU, he's supremely talented, But for LSU to get where it wants to get at the end of the year, which is Omaha National Championship, he's going to have to be the guy for me that is going to have to take a big step forward as the season progresses.
Kendall, whenever if you take a couple steps back and look at more of an airplane overview of just what all the baseball that you've watched through the years, could this be as simple or close to as simple as the teams that they've played are not all that great and their pitching is subpar and LSU is used to playing against teams that have better pitchers, and when they get against higher caliber competition with better pitching, they may perform better or break out of it?
Now, that's one way to look at it. You know, I guess it is. I mean, it could honestly, I'm joking more than anything, but it honestly could be as simple as once they get into conference play, they kind of know they have to do it a little bit. You know, the thing about SEC teams, and again, I'm not trying to make excuses for SEC teams, but if you do well in the SEC, like, honest to God, like, it doesn't matter what you even do in the first 2 weeks of season.
No
as
question.
Long as you do well in conference, that's all that matters. So I will say this. As of right now, I am not terribly concerned about LSU, but I will tell you this. If they go to Nashville this weekend with the same energy, making the same mistakes, the killer instinct isn't there, I will have alarm bells sounding. I do think that would be very disturbing if you're an LSU fan. If the first week in a conference, going against Vanderbilt, a team that certainly LSU and Vandy have had their big bouts over the years, like if that doesn't get you going, I don't know what does.
Well, you talk about LSU struggles. Vandy's had their share of struggles as well so far, like 10-7 right now.
Yeah, right now it could be one of those things where it's like an arm wrestling match between two really weak armed people or something, where like neither team can really do anything right, but they're both really talented. I think the big key is, for Vanderbilt is, I just haven't loved their starting pitching. I do like some of their offensive pieces, Colin Barzy, assuming he's healthy and playing this weekend. He's a powerful guy. Braden Holcomb, powerful guy. So, I mean, there's a lot of parallels there. I think LSU's upside's a lot higher than Vanderbilt's, but it's two teams with a lot of talent that just, so far, it just hasn't panned out. The one thing I will say for LSU that I cannot say for Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt has not had a weekend this year where you're like, man, they're really good. I mean, even Globe Life opening weekend when I saw Vandy, Colin Barzy went off, but they didn't look very good. LSU, the thing I keep going back to with LSU is the offense was really good in Jacksonville against UCF, who I think is going to be in a contention for a regional spot. And against Notre Dame, a team we're finding out is pretty good. So that is the one weekend that gives me a lot of hope that this team's going to take a big step forward.
Well, Kendall, before we let you go, just curious, where are you at this weekend?
I will be here locally, actually, a Big 12 series. I might hit one game of Ole Miss, Texas. I'm also going to see Kansas State and Houston here locally. K-State's D. Kennedy, one of the top hitters in college baseball. I want to say last week or 2 weeks ago, we had three home runs in a game, including a grand slam. That's the one thing, guys, I would say to kind of keep an eye on as we get in SEC play or the home run numbers. I feel like, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of feel like you're seeing more of those explosive home runs that you saw 2 years ago. I don't think we saw it near as much last year. But it feels like this year, man, there's been a lot of power generation. I don't know if it's the weather, it's been a little bit warmer than usual or what, but that's kind of what I'm keeping an eye on, not only in the SEC this weekend, but also ACC, Big 12, et cetera.
All right, Kendall, thanks a lot for your time, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, good night.
All right, buddy, we'll keep up with you.
Bye.
All right, we'll be back with more Tiger Egg Radio and Rudy Macklin right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me, home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Todd Horn, Andre Champagne from Tiger Rag, and we're now joined by three-time first-team All-SEC and All-American SEC Player of the Year 1981, Rudy Macklin. Rudy, thanks for joining us, pal.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Rudy, it's Todd. We're going to talk about 1981 in a little while, but we got to address the elephant in the room right now. I mean, LSU's got one more game in the SEC tournament, probably. Maybe they'll have more, but more than likely against Kentucky on Wednesday morning at 11, tomorrow morning at 11:30. It may be Matt McMahon's last game as LSU head coach, at least if the fans get their way. The sentiment seems to be strongly on the fan side that they want him gone because there's just no energy in the program right now, according to the fan base collectively. But my point is that LSU is not in a financial situation to buy out another coach and another coaching staff and pay a buyout potentially for a new coach. That's dead money. But aside from the financial issues, Matt McMahon had to take over a program from one of the popular choices to replace him, Will Wade, who basically destroyed the program. And Matt McMahon was hired to stabilize the program. And my question to you is, has he done it, and is he getting a fair shake right now?
Well, from day one, the odds were against him. Immediately, what Will Wade had done to the program, it put the school on probation for a number of years. And that meant he couldn't contact any players. He couldn't recruit any players. He actually had to put together a team in 30 days when he first took the job. Because my first question to him when I first met him was, why did you take this job? And when it comes to recruiting itself, the first day LSU went on vacation, all five-star and four-star recruits, they talk to one another in all-star games, AAU tournaments. They all talk to one another and say, hey, what do you think about LSU? Or what do you think about this school? And they said, no, I don't want to go there because they're going to be on probation. That means they're not going to be on TV. They're not going to be on the tournaments. And so the reputation of the school was killed that day. Now, fast forward to what Coach McMahon has done. Yes, he has stabilized the program with players. But when he came off probation, they did not give him the amount of nil money he needed to go into the portal to get the type of players he should have in order to bring the program back to the glory days of Dale Brown. And so that made it tough for him. Then he had his top players get injured. And so if you're going to bring the reputation back to the school itself, sometimes you have to bring in another coach with a big reputation. Well, LSU probably don't have the money to do that. And so if you want to get to where it was back when I played, you got to find a male version of a Kim Mulkey. Do they want to pay that kind of money? You pay big money to get a football coach. We understand that. You pay big money to get the women's basketball coach, to me, the best in the country, Kim Mulkey. You pay good money to get a baseball coach. So are you going to pay good money to get a good basketball coach? Basketball is like the short end of the stick. You know, in order to boost the reputation of the school, you need a spark. You need a big-time reputation coach to come in, and you got to pay for him. And as far as McMahon, he stabilized the program, yes, and it may be the best interest of the school to release him in order to get a big name, but can they afford a big name?
Yeah.
And so back when I played with the Knicks, Hubie Brown told me, in this business, we don't worry about feelings, okay?
Mm-hmm. So, Rudy, let me ask you that about sparking the program. This is just a question, all right? Obviously, it would be great if you had all the money in the world, which LSU doesn't right now, to to bite off that dead money. That money that's dead means it's buyout money, and it can't be used to stimulate the program. It's sitting there as a debt that you have to pay for, right? So that money is going to be more stabilized at this time next year. McMahon has got possibly, you don't know what's going to happen in the portal, but possibly five key players, core players that could come back, including Dedon Thomas and Jalen Reed. Why not just give him additional money so he's got the same type of roster development money that the other SEC schools have? And what do you have to lose?
Because most of the fans, as you said earlier, as well as alumni and the administration, they're in a we need to win now moment. Okay? So it may be the best thing for them to let him go and bring in a big name if they can afford it, because you need that spark. I like this coach. I like McMahon, really, I do. But he came at a time when the reputation is down and you need a spark. And that spark is a big name coach to start over to get the attention of the recruits across the country. And but if LSU had the money to do that, then yes, business-wise, you should go after a big name coach. But since they do not have the money to do that, you know, stay with him another year to see if he can do it.
Hey, Rudy, would you mind staying with us through the break? Come back with us?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Right. Okay. We still got a little bit of time here on this. How late in the game is it right now? I mean, I thought that if they were going to fire McMahon, they would have done it a couple of weeks ago and then start looking for a coach. If they do decide to let McMahon go, is it too late in the game to find the right coach, or how do you feel about that?
I thought about that same question the other day. And just the other day, I'm like, I think they may have waited too late to let him go.
Because the portal opens on April 7th, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they may have waited too late because they could have got a jump start on that, you know, those players coming in the portal and who was available and to go after them. And so it may be to the point where they don't have the money to go after the big name coach, and they waited too late to jump to let him go. So they may have to stay with him.
Yeah, I think just from listening to you two guys talk, the best thing might be to give him a decent amount of money to get out of the cellar in roster payments, roster purchases, to give him a chance, get him some better players, and if he doesn't win next year, then next year you probably will have more money, and then you can go hire that big coach. But we'll continue this conversation with Rudy Macklin with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Let's go!
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. We're with Rudy Macklin. Go ahead, Ty.
Hey, Rudy, just to pick up where we left off really quick, you ideally, maybe too late right now, as we were just discussing, but you would like them to be able to bring a big spark in, like a Kim Mulkey-type hire or a Lane Kiffin-type hire. May not be able to do that, but what provides that spark more, a big-name coach or winning?
Oh, man. If he can, but there's no guarantee.
Right, no guarantee.
No guarantee. As far as him winning, if we did give him another year, but having a big name coach come in, he comes in with a lot of fanfare and a lot of players across the country, the top players in the portal and in the AAU circuits, all will know who this person is, and they'll gravitate to him the same way they gravitate to Lane Kiffin and Kim Mulkey. But because LSU's in this predicament of not having the money and to pay for a big name coach like that, and they waited really too late to me now to let him go, then give him that one more year and the Neil money to go after the players and see what he could do in this one year.
Yeah, that would be fair.
I think that would be fair to me because
he deserves it
after what he'd been through from the beginning. My heart goes out to him, you know, and the reputation was,
immediately destroyed day one when LSU went on probation.
Right.
Day one, it was destroyed. And all the top players live off reputations. The top players gravitate toward great basketball powers with reputations. LSU's was destroyed. And now they got to get it back. But the predicament they're in, one more year with him, and give him the funds he needs to get out there and get those top players to bring, because he knows what he's doing. He knows the X's and O's. He executes well out there. The players play hard for him. He just don't have the talent.
Yeah.
And let him get the talent for this year. Come one more year and see what he could do.
Yeah, he only needs like a couple of them, man. But, well, speaking of that, let's talk about when it was great. when you were playing at LSU, Rudy, I was a freshman at LSU in 79-80, and Todd was there right after. And the atmosphere in that building, man, what was it like as a player just walking out into the PMAC as a player with Daddy Dale in those great years?
It made it even – it was so special because when I came in 76, that crowd wasn't there. It was probably like the crowd like it is now, but less. Okay, it was less even back then, and to have that crowd come out that my sophomore year when we had beat Kentucky when they were number one, and it was amazing to see. I mean, they were holding up fingers for tickets outside, people wanting tickets, and it was ticket scalping going on at that time, and the fire marshals were like turning a blind eye to people who sat in the steps in the aisles, you know. And it was like Ole Miss was sold out. Okay, Ole Miss, you sell out for Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I mean, it was just amazing, man, to see a packed house every time out, and every time somebody shoot a jump shot and hit, you hear the crowd go whoop, and you just love that kind of stuff, man. And when you dunk the ball, the crowd goes crazy. And we had the front row lunatics. Remember those guys?
Oh yeah,
the front row lunatics is up front, man, and it was just amazing atmosphere to see it transform from that football school, you know, to a basketball power. Okay, we were it then. Okay, football was kind of lagging a little bit.
Sure.
And basketball had taken over, and that was a beautiful thing. And it went statewide. Everybody became a Tiger fan statewide, and that's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing.
And the you won the two games in the Superdome to get to the Final Four. You had two great games. What was that atmosphere like? Did they bring the Assembly Center with them to the Dome?
Oh, they brought everybody. I mean, they brought not only the Assembly Center, man, they brought it from other schools. It was amazing. Other universities, when they talk about LSU, whether you went to ULL or McNeese or Nichols, whenever they talk about LSU basketball, they say, well, you know, all we have to do is win this game. Oh, you a we now? You part of LSU now? Everybody used the word we, okay? And so that was a beautiful thing. And so to have, you know, 40, 50,000, I think it was in the Dome, you know, to watch a game, a basketball game, was beautiful, man. And it was about the journey. You know, it was all about the journey than the destination.
So, Rudy, you mentioned that when you got here in 76, it was dead, relatively speaking. How did they build the program? How did Dale build the program? Y'all had great players.
He was not a big-name head coach when he got there either.
Exactly. It was amazing because when he recruited me, we sat in Shawnee Park where I learned how to play in a famous summer league tournament, how we were going to build the program. He and I together. And we spent 2.5 hours talking about the type of style we were going to play and the new guys he brought in to build around me. Okay, I was the focal point.
Right.
And he talked about this guy named Greg Cook.
Yeah.
He talked about this guy named Jordy Holtberg, right? And he talked about we had Kenny Higgs there. He said, I need one guy that can come in and make an impact right away. And he said, I'm building this around you. And he said, if you go to any of those other basketball powers, they're going to do well whether you go or not. He said, but if you come to LSU, you can always say you built something. And I came on that promise alone. And when I came with those guys, the three freshmen, myself, Jordy, and Greg Cook, and we started playing together, we knew we had something special but it also opened the eyes of recruits across the country. When the other recruits saw that I took the chance to come to LSU, a football school, a coach with a losing season, they said, LSU must be okay. And so they said, yeah, come on, let's go. Rudy Macklin came. We need to go. And it gave him his first winning season. I think we went 15-12. And we were close to getting into the NIT, but we had something to build on, and they were able to recruit. But he changed the style of play. He had gotten rid of some guys the year before, brought us in, changed the style of play, went to an aggressive, you know, defense and running the basketball. He wanted to run the ball, and he knew then he had something to build on.
Well, Rudy, thanks for coming to LSU and staying in Baton Rouge all these years and working for the state. And thanks for joining us tonight, man. Great appearance.
Oh, thank you so much. And I enjoy reliving those memories because it's something I can cherish forever. Thank you all.
Well, we enjoyed it. Thank you, Rudy. And we'll be back with more Tiger Ag Radio right after this.
Thanks, Rudy.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn and Andre Champagne from Tiger Rag. And listen, you can listen to this whole show wherever you listen to your favorite podcast or on YouTube shortly after the show ends. You can also get it on the Tiger Rag site and go back and listen to that great interview with Rudy Macklin. Those are some heady times, man, when he was playing for the Tigers. And you know, he was like a fifth-year senior in 80-81 because I think he got hurt one year and missed the whole year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they weren't great when he first got here, but they built and got better each year. So go back and listen to that. But he made some great points about Matt McMahon too, because you know it wouldn't be right to bring in a new coach and then suddenly give him all the money for the roster, because I mean every year McMahon's been here he's been at the bottom for the roster money in the SEC, and he's been at the bottom of the SEC most of the time in the standing. So it's not hard to figure that out. So give him a little more, give him significantly more money, let him bring in some great players to go with DJ and Jalen Reed and Jalen Reese, who's really coming around, and Robert Miller III is developing. You know, there's the makings there of a team. But Todd Horn wrote a great column early this week about the Matt McMahon situation that exploded on the metrics and social media and so forth. And since then, several donors and LSU people have been talking to Todd. And Todd, what are you hearing from them about Matt McMahon's status?
Well, you know, I'm going to equate it to what Rudy said. He said buzz. Everybody wants to build the energy back into the program, and everybody realizes this is not the old days. And the old days were just last year when you could come in and pump money into the program and turn around. They can't afford the buyout right now. And the alumni and the donors especially know that.
I think they could get the buyout, but they can't get the buyout and the new coach and the new roster.
Right, but the problem is, even with the buyouts, okay, is that goes on your debt right now. So we know it would cost them like $20 million minimum in dead money, you know, 8 for Matt, his staff, the buyouts for Will Wade or whoever the coach would be.
That's what Verge told us. But what you're telling me is that the donors are also not ready to do it.
Well, I'm not saying they're not ready to do it. They realize the impracticality of it. And the most important thing is those dollars, that debt hits the books right away. So LSU's already looking at a $30 million deficit, possibly $35 million deficit right now from the Brian Kelly shenanigans. But that would immediately put it to $55 million. Okay. And so the donors realize that they want the buzz, and they would love to have, believe it or not, the buzz of a Will Wade come back, because he won. He won here. He had the buzz. Now, it's he's kind of grown in folklore as to how he won. He only really won one SEC championship and went to one Sweet 16.
He got worse each year.
Yeah, but they were in the top five every year of the SEC. But he's demanding $15 million for his roster. So they can't why spend at least $20 million to spend another $15 million so you get a high-caliber roster in when you have a coach right now who – with that same $15 million roster, would be able to compete in the SEC because he'd have the talent to do it.
Right, and that's what they need to do. Maybe right. Not $15 million, but they need to up the money and give him a better chance, I think. But
yeah, one last thing on what the – so they're talking about Will Wade, but they're not seriously talking about approaching him. That's what I'm gathering right now.
Okay, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council, Boudreaux's Electrical Services, Sunshine Quality Solutions, Super Chevy Dealers, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, and welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. We're going to continue our conversation about Matt McMahon later on in the show, but right now we're switching over to baseball, and we're joined by the Natural, as he was often called at LSU, Todd Walker. Todd, how are you?
Glenn, I'm great, man. You've been around a long time, and you were covering us 30 years ago, dude. I mean, this is in your blood, right?
Too long, man, too long. But speaking of that, I was trying to remember, because I covered your whole career at LSU, and I don't really remember you having a hitting slump, except for the one you had briefly in Omaha that you busted out of big time with the Grand Slam against Texas A&M. What do you think of this team-wide slump, or most of the team, that LSU is in, and how are you able to avoid slumps?
First of all, I couldn't sleep when I didn't get a hit, which is normal. Now I look back on baseball, I wish somebody would have told me, look, the best of the best go through slumps. And slump doesn't necessarily mean you're striking out all the time. I mean, you can hit balls all over the ballpark, and you know, you go through times when they're just right at people, and then you have this bad luck streak. In the big leagues, you know, you can go 0-20, 0-25, and you know, and still be a good hitter. But I never thought that way. So I remember, I want to say I was 0-5, 0-4 against UNO, and me and Mike Neal went back to the box, and we turned the lights on, and we hit all night. I remember the sun coming up, man, my hands were bleeding, you know, that type of stuff. So I couldn't deal with it. And I'm sure, like, there is no grinder, there's no bigger grinder in that clubhouse right now than Jay Johnson, right? But he can't play. There's only 200-300 hitters in this group right now, which, you know, I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth. It's still baseball. It's very difficult. My son always, you know, says that, you know, if they throw 96, they're a good pitcher. But if they throw 86, they're not. And that he equates velocity to whether they're good or not. So they're facing a lot of guys that they're, you know, that couldn't make it in the SEC, yet they're not getting hits. And that's a little concerning. But at the same time, his baseball, and it's tough. And I think a lot of times I went out there going, man, if I'm playing, you know, Dartmouth or High Point, you know, or somebody like that, I feel like I gotta get 5 hits today, and you end up, you know, like running yourself in the ground. And so I think there's a little bit of that going on. Clearly Jake Brown has been great. I'm not overly concerned about it because it's a talented group, you know, 1-9, like they really don't have, you know, a bad hitter. And, you know, they're going to feed off each other. In addition, you know, when I think hitters, I look to the walk strikeout. You know, can they handle the bat? Are they handling good approaches? And there's a lot of guys that have at least as many walks and hit by pitches, you know, free passes than they do strikeouts. And that tells me that's a sign of a good hitter. And there's a lot of those guys in this lineup. So it's just a matter of time before the balls start falling around. I'm not overly concerned with it. But, again, if you look at the numbers after, you know, what is it, 17, 18 games of non-conference play, and you only got two guys that are above 300, that, you know, that would be a little cause for concern.
Todd, you mentioned that Jay is a grinder, and he's probably, you know, not able to sleep at night just like you were whenever you were playing. But, you know, like you said, he's not in the box himself, and he said that. He said, I'm not in the box. And that's obvious. But what can he do from a coaching perspective, and what is he doing from a coaching perspective? Because he's like an offensive coordinator from football and baseball. So what is he doing to try and walk them through this slump, so to speak?
Gosh, that's such a great question because it's so hard to answer. You can't grind. You can't go, all right, let's go to the cage for 5 hours and work it out. That's not the way it works. In fact, if anything, it goes in the reverse direction. At some point, you became a psychologist. Like, those guys are there for a reason. They all were the best players on their high school team. Some have been at LSU. Stephen Milam, he's got the at-bats in the SEC. At some point, Stephen Milam has to understand that he doesn't have to carry the team. A new guy like Dardar has to understand that he just has to do his job, take the walks. You don't have to be big. You know, just do what you are capable of doing. A lot of times in baseball, it's patience. And it's going 3, 4, 5 games without getting a hit, but you're going deep in counts. You're helping the guys behind you. You're hitting balls hard, even though you might be out. You're doing your job, hitting the ground ball to the right side with a guy on second, nobody out, moving them over, that type of thing. Getting them in from third with less than 2 outs instead of striking out. There's certain things you can do, you know, that make a difference that doesn't necessarily reflect on your batting average. And I think you're seeing a little bit of that. But for Jay, he's got to be pulling his hair out because, again, what he'd like to do is probably like Bertman used to do us, you know, make us run 18 miles in the morning, you know. And back when I played, it was more of a punishment thing. Now, and we understand that doesn't work. I think now he just tinkers with the lineup, see what works. Although the bell's ringing now, you got to go now. It's SEC time. You've seen him move guys around in the lineup. Ultimately, you become a psychologist. Some of the best hitting coaches I ever had in the big leagues really didn't talk about technique. They just filled your head full of positive thoughts. You're the best. You're great. You know, you can do this. And I think at this point, that's the most important thing, is making the kids believe in themselves and understand who they play for, which is LSU, you know, 2-time national champion in the last 3 years. But that same message is being said when they've lost the last 4 out of 5, which is, you can't just put on the uniform and walk out there and have people lie down. I mean, they're going to fight you probably harder than anybody else.
Talking to Todd Walker, former LSU national champion in the 1993 season, went to Omaha twice in the LSU Hall of Fame, long Major League Baseball career, and is a baseball analyst for SEC Network. What game are you at this weekend, Todd?
LSU Vandy.
Are you broadcasting the LSU Vandy game this weekend?
No, I don't have anything until March 29th. I got Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I thought you were asking me about the matchup.
Oh, I got you. How do you see this LSU Vanderbilt series coming up this weekend?
Well, if the standings mean anything right now, Vanderbilt's in last place, right? They're 12-5. LSU's what's LSU 10-7, something like that.
Vanderbilt's 10-7, LSU's 12-5 right now.
Oh yes. Yeah. I wasn't ever very good at math. always when you go on the road in the SEC, it's more difficult than if you play at home. The numbers play it out. If you go look at last year, you know, like, I think Arkansas was something silly, like, you know, 25-4 at home. You know, there's certain teams that just play way better at home. I think you'll see that with Vanderbilt. Connor Fennell is probably the guy they're going to face on Friday night. Remember last year, he was undefeated. He, in 7 starts, he went 6-0. Big, tall, lanky kid's got command of the fastball with some movement. Can trick you with some off speed and hitters counts, that type of thing. He's their Friday night guy. Saturday, Sunday guys are also right-handed, so it's a predominantly right-handed staff. They got a couple bullpen arms they can throw at you left-handed, but that's a positive, you know, with the left-handed bats, including Jake Brown in LSU's lineup. Stephen Milam moves over to the left side, you know, so, but they're going to be good. I mean, you know, every week's going to be difficult. They've got know, Brody Johnson was the SEC tournament MVP last year. He's back. Brady Holcomb, 6'5", big old dude, hit 350 with 9 home runs. So they're swinging the bats a little better than they have in the past. Probably, like I said earlier, kind of a product of who you're playing, but they're going to play well at home. So it's a tough thing for LSU. Clearly, you would have liked to go in with some momentum. I think it's the opposite right now. They're probably doubting themselves a little bit, but this is a good way to get back on track.
And what's your impressions of LSU's weekend rotation so far?
Oh, I mean, I'm not that's actually my least of my concerns is the arms. You know, Case and Evans is a stud. Cooper Moore has been great from Kansas, transfer over. You know, and then the local kid, William Schmidt's been great. So they're three guys that they start. I can't imagine that Jay's going to do anything with that rotation regardless of the outcome of the game because those three guys have been really good. And if one doesn't last very long, they can always bring in, you know, 6 talented bullpen arms, Maverick Rizzi, you know, some of these guys that are really good. So I think the concern is the defense. Giving away free passes, which is walks, hit by pitches, and then when you throw the errors in there, I mean, they're second to last in errors. You start doing that. If you look at the SEC schedule when it's all said and done, the teams that are in last place are the ones that gave up the most walks, gave up the most hit by pitches, and committed the most errors. And LSU's doing that right now, and that's not a good sign. But I think that's the concern. The pitching staff for me is not a concern at all. I think they've attacked the zone well. Yeski's one of the best in the country. You know, not only with working with pitchers, but adapting. So he'll get it figured out. Zach Cowan is a good example of somebody that needs to figure it out, but he might be a little upset that he wasn't drafted. There might be some mental stuff going on there. His changeup's his best pitch, and he can't get to it. I mean, they're hammering that fastball, you know, and he's got to feel comfortable. Like, he's got to hit spots, you know, because he doesn't throw 98, throws 91, 92. But he'll figure it out, there's no doubt. To look at it that way, that if you just but the problem with Zach is you got to keep throwing him out there, and if he keeps struggling, you got to keep throwing him out there until he figures it out, because he will. But there's a lot of trust involved in that, right? So I think overall, I'm not worried about the pitching staff. It's the errors, and then yeah, we got to get these bats going.
So overall, statistically, LSU is not very good right now, but you don't sound all that worried about this team turning it around in time to make an impact during a 10-week SEC season?
Well, it's not a, you know, I think that Jay said at one point, this is the most talented roster he's ever had. I think Moscona told me that, or I don't see that, especially in 2023 with the roster they had there. But it reminds me of the 2022 team. Remember, they weren't even going to make the postseason. Right.
Right.
And they end up getting in, and they were one win away from going to the super regional. So that's what you see, you know, you start looking back on those moments, and they're far, far away from – they win the SEC tournament having to win that first game that year, and they're far cry from that right now. They're too talented. And so, again, I just think it feels like without being in that clubhouse, it feels like they put a lot of pressure on themselves. And, of course, it gets worse the more losses you stack up, right, because then you start losing, and you're like, wow, you start doubting yourself, like I said, and you don't feel like the LSU – that you should be. But if this is in fact the most talented roster that Jay Johnson has ever had, then they're going to figure it out.
Todd, when you had brief slumps when you were hitting at LSU, what did Skip say, or what did Skip do? You remember?
The greatest thing he did that I figured out later on in life is he didn't touch me. He didn't say anything to me other than being positive, and he didn't touch me. And because of that, I was able to just not focus on the things I should focus on, and not the fact that I'm, you know, 0 for 12 or whatever, you know, struggling, not hitting it like I feel like I should. And so I was just able to do my thing without any outside noise. And that's going back to what I was, you asked the question, what Jay can do, as little as possible, you know, and other than being a psychologist, because you start going in the caves, like I said, start working mechanics this time of the year, it's going to work in reverse, and it's not going to be good. It's more mental at this point. Hey, maybe you should take the first pitch. Or, hey, you know, with the guy on second, nobody out, you know, they've got all the statistics now. You're going to get a 90% chance you're going to get an off-speed pitch, first pitch. You know, if it's around the zone, those things, you know, you're a great hitter, you know. Certain things like that. I mean, it wouldn't hurt if they get Chris Stanfield back at some point. But, you know, but one of the things of winning national championships, you got to stay healthy, you know. And Gavin Guidry was cruising along till he got the start last week, and then, you know, now he's walked a few guys. I know what he's trying to do is get guys in different roles and get them some work in. But ultimately, you got to be in the role you feel like comfortable. And for me, like, I see Zach Kellen, you know, and Gavin Guidry as closers at the back end. So you don't got one talented kid, you got two. And now you start putting them in roles and keep them there regardless of what happens. And we roll from there. So I don't see the pitching staff, the rotation, the bullpen, and then the closers changing that much. I just think they probably need to be a little more patient and a little more selective at the plate. And selective means smarter. You know, like I just said, it's not always the best thing to go after the first pitch.
All right, Todd Walker, thanks. Words of wisdom. Appreciate your time, buddy. We'll see you down the road, man.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this timeout.
Spring into action with your East Baton Rouge Parish Public Library. This month, poetry and nature rule. Check out details on their One Book, One Community series featuring poetry anthology, You Are Here, Poetry in the Natural World. Enjoy live music, free food, and fun for the whole family at the One Book, One Community celebration, We Are Here, a gathering of poets on March 28th, 4 to 8 p.m. Spring into action this March with help from your East Baton Rouge Parish Library. For details, go to ebrpl.com.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Let's go!
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, we're back with Tiger Rag Radio. Another great guest, Todd Walker. You love these athletes who really can talk about the game, and that's Rudy Macklin and Todd Walker. So far tonight, baseball players, it's kind of a natural. They always know how to talk about the game, and they remember everything, but Rudy as well. And that's two great guests. And Todd with some great insight there on hitting. You know, Jay does, as an offensive coordinator, as you said, he works a lot with those guys. But at a certain point, you know, it's up to them. As you said, but we're going to have Reed Darcy on at 7:30. But let's return to our conversation we were having earlier about Matt McMahon and this emotional cry for Will Wade. One of the big misconceptions, I think, is that, you know, yeah, Will Wade got caught cheating a lot in a short period of time, and you know, half a dozen level one violations. And people are like, oh, well, you know, that's all okay now because, you know, they're paying players anyway. And that's only true to a certain extent because a lot of the stuff Will was doing would be illegal now. I mean, there was some money laundering and you know, he actually used his wife's bank account, you know, to funnel some money. And, you know, the phone call said it all, just how brazen he could be. He, while on that phone call talking about Javonte Smart, he was bragging about how he bought previous players. I thought that was the most amazing thing about that FBI wiretap. But I'll say this. He was immature. He was reckless. I think he has grown up quite a bit, and he's proven himself at McNeese. And you know, pretty much at North Carolina State, he's in a losing skid right now. But he's done a pretty good job there his first year. You know, probably end up in the tournament. And he's at a really good spot now. But, you know, I don't think it's automatically going to be the same if he does somehow come back to LSU.
No, you know, I did a lot of deep research on analytics on Wade and on McMahon, and they're two totally different types of coaches. You know, McMahon is more of a systems coach. He tries to develop players, run motion offenses.
Screens,
lots of, you know, very patient, right?
Half court.
Right.
But he runs too.
Yeah, but and defense, even though the defense hasn't been good this year, traditionally he's a great defensive first coach.
Doesn't have good defensive players.
Now, that's what it comes down to. When you look at the analytics, Wade is always won by having great players, like top caliber players. And when he was in the SEC at LSU, he had good players. It was pre-NIL, but he was still, as we know, paying for them. But it's interesting to me that one of the conditions is he wants a $15 million a year roster. Well, that you know, the top teams in the SEC this year, Florida, Alabama, I was going to say Kentucky, but they're spending a lot more than this, are averaging between $12 and $18 million expenses for their roster.
Florida is?
Arkansas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Arkansas.
Arkansas is Tennessee. Below,
Tennessee.
Arkansas is below 20?
I believe so.
Arkansas is about 18 on the dot.
Yeah.
So now, Kentucky's above 20.
So 15,
and they're not any good.
But 15 puts you in that area where you can get one or two like All-American type players.
Where do you think McMahon is right now? About eight?
I think they were at eight last year, and the year before that they were at 1.5.
Yeah. So what do you so eight last year? What do you think they are this year?
I don't know. I don't. I know.
Think,
well, you got to combine.
Still under 10.
You got to combine the revenue share, which didn't exist before this year,
yeah.
Right? So we know that they're getting 15% of the $20.5 million, right? According to what Verge told us.
But that really didn't go into this roster.
Yeah,
though.
It went into this year's roster.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. So that's part of that $8 million. So that's that. You know, Kentucky's spending 22, Arkansas spending 18, Florida's spending about 18.
And LSU's about 8 or 10.
Yeah. No, they're at 8.
Okay.
They're at 8 right for this year. Now, what they're going to be moving forward, that's why
So you're saying this roster that LSU has now was about $8 million.
The one that is playing in the SEC tournament against Kentucky tomorrow,
gotcha.
Minus their top two revenue earners, which was Deion Thomas and Jalen Reed. Are worth $8 million.
And that's the bottom of the SEC.
Right. That's in the bottom third of the SEC now.
Right.
So you haven't supported the stabilization of the program with the type of roster development, roster expenditure is the most important thing in the SEC right now. That's why Wade supposedly doesn't want to think about coming back to LSU unless they're going to commit, similar to what LSU had to do for Lane, to a certain amount of expenditure on the roster.
Well, Will Wade's not Lane.
No, I know. But the point is the similarities are they're demanding, hey, look, if you want to win, you got to give me $15 million.
Yeah.
Wade's saying that.
Yeah. Well,
give McMahon.
Give McMahon that. Or if you do get a new coach, it doesn't have to be Wade. You know, there's other good coaches out there that would ask for that much. But we've covered all that, and we're going to switch gears over to women's basketball right after this break with the great Reed Darcy from the Baton Rouge Advocate. We'll be back with more Tiger Egg Radio right after this timeout.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. Correct pronunciation. We're trying to get change his name to Andre Champagne. But we've had a great show tonight with Todd Walker and Rudy Macklin so far, and also Kendall Rogers early on. Baseball. If you want to listen to the show, go to your where you listen to your favorite podcasts, or go to YouTube, and also be on the Tiger Egg site shortly after the show. And right now we are joined by Baton Rouge advocate, women's basketball writer, Reed Darcy. Reed, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great, guys, but I'm not sure how I feel about going after a couple of LSU legends there.
You know, you should feel fine because you're becoming a legend yourself.
You enjoying a little time off in between the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it's a nice little break. It doesn't slow down completely, but it does slow down a little bit. And I've kind of taken the time here, I think, to look up some hotels and some restaurants in Sacramento because I really feel like that's where I'll be headed in a couple of weeks.
Oh, and why is that?
Well, I think when you look at it, you know, a couple things changed through the weekend of the conference tournaments. One is that Vanderbilt lost to Ole Miss, and the other thing is that LSU beat Oklahoma and beat them pretty badly. So I think those two things kind of pushed LSU up in the rankings, at least according to the selection committee, which means that they're probably going to get paired with UCLA now, who's probably going to be the number two overall seed. If you remember the last time the selection committee offered that glimpse into the top 16 seeds, they really did it. They really were careful to avoid pairing SEC teams with each other. So because Texas and South Carolina have those last two number one seeds locked up, I'd expect LSU, because they're presumably higher than Vanderbilt now, to get paired with that number two overall team, which it really looks like is going to be UCLA.
Reed, whether it's UCLA or UConn or South Carolina or Texas that LSU has to face in the tournament, and like you said, it'll probably be UCLA, and I believe you, can they win any of those games if they are fighting amongst themselves like Joyner and Fulwiley? Starkey is pushing Williams out of the huddle, and they're not following directions in clutch from the coach. Can they put all that pull? Is there a problem? Are things rotten in Denmark, or is that just emotion in the heat of a game and they just need to learn from it?
I think the Fulwiley Joyner thing, and then this, you know, Bob Starkey, Michaela Williams thing, you know, it was probably just a sign of frustration, you know, more than anything. And I think when you get into those competitive environments in a hostile, you know, against a hostile crowd and a really good team, and things, you know, aren't going as well as you'd hope them to do, I think things like that can happen in basketball. So I personally did not look too much into either of those incidents. But that being said, I think LSU overall needs to be better at just executing its half-court offense. I think that's probably number one, because there's a couple instances here, you know, when you think back to other South Carolina losses and other losses that LSU has had in the season. They have not been able to score in the half-court nearly as effectively as they need to. You know, they can't be as reliant on their transition offense as they are, because they're going to run into so many good teams who can score the ball, and you know, no matter how LSU really defends them. So if LSU has to take the ball out of the net as often as they did in the second half of the game against South Carolina, then they might run into some troubles, and they might have some frustrating little brushes, I suppose, going toward timeouts, toward the sideline. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of basketball, but it's kind of a symptom of frustration that they have to be feeling after, you know, losing to South Carolina so many times.
Hey, Reed, this is Andre. Just kind of sticking with that South Carolina loss, it seemed like LSU had played some of their best basketball in the first half, but then, like we've seen many times this year, and I think all five of their losses, just a breakdown in the second half. Just what have you seen, I guess, from these trends and I guess from those losses that are just not allowing LSU to kind of come through in the clutch?
Yeah, South Carolina has done a really good job of executing its half-court offense late in games. It's really done a really a good job of making sure that it's getting good looks in the half-court, getting high-percentage looks in the half-court. And what's happened as a result of that, they're scoring buckets, and those buckets have taken away transition opportunities from LSU. And that's really when LSU is at its best, at its most dangerous, when they can run in transition. And, you know, if you look in the second half of the game against South Carolina on Saturday, they were either not defending well enough, giving up open shots, or the times when they did force a miss, they weren't grabbing enough rebounds. South Carolina, I believe, had 9 offensive rebounds just in the second half of that game, and they turned those rebounds into about 14 second chance points. So that's not going to cut it. You know, for a team like LSU that is so dangerous in transition, when they can get out and run, they need to defend and rebound, and then they need to do it against some of the top teams in the country, probably UCLA in the Elite Eight, if they want to get back to the Final Four. It's going to start with that, because it's the key to unlocking that transition offense that's been so dangerous for them.
Yeah, and you make a good point, because, you know, a lot of it had to deal with personnel issues in the second, not issues, but personnel decisions in the second half of that South Carolina game. With LSU, if they do match up against a UCLA, how big do you think a Kate Koval becomes just for this team, you know, having to defend a Lauren Betts just with that matchup? And I guess we haven't really seen Kate much in the past few weeks, but it seems like she has been kind of trending in the right direction. What have you seen?
Sure, yeah. She's definitely trending in the right direction. I think she's played some good basketball in spurts lately. I think back to Mississippi State. She was awesome in that game. It was probably the best defensive game she's played all year. Looking ahead, looking too far ahead, you know, admittedly to that matchup with UCLA that they're probably going to run into. Lauren Betts is 6'7", and then so they need their tallest player, Kate Koval, who's 6'5", to match up with her. Amaya Joyner has been a good defender and a good rebounder at times, but she's 6'2", and it's going to be asking quite a lot of her to tussle with Lauren Betts down low. Not too many players across the country can, but I think Kate Koval has shown that she has the potential to do that. Certainly, you know, she's she's gotten more comfortable on the defensive end of the floor throughout the season, and obviously she has the size, strength, and skill to really defend and rebound around the rim well. So she's going to be key. But, you know, I think back to I look at UCLA, and I think that, you know, if you look at their guards, you know, they kind of like to play the smaller lineups. You know, they have a lot of shooters, and so they don't exactly have two strong post players. They kind of space it out a little bit. And so that might actually kind of play into LSU's hands a little bit, because that gives them an opportunity to put all four of their guards on the floor at the same time: Jada Richard, Malaysia Fuwaili, and then Faje and Michaela. You know, I think if they ran into a bigger team like maybe UConn, they wouldn't have that opportunity. But because, say they do run into UCLA, I think they can go small in that matchup, which is a positive for them, because those small lineups are really when they're at their best, when they have all four of those guards on the floor.
Yeah, and just wrapping up here, we have about a minute. Just quickly tell me, Gary Redis was hired as the Rutgers head coach on Monday. You've been covering this team for a while now. Just how much of a loss is this for Mulkey and her staff?
Yeah, pretty big loss. Coach G, as they call them, he's a really great recruiter, and that's really where his strength is as a coach. He helped LSU sign 2 number one freshman classes in 4 years. This freshman class that LSU has right now has been really, really good. You know, I think it's met expectations, if not surpassed them. And if they can keep those players out of the transfer portal, it's going to be the backbone of their program for the next 2 or 3 years. So it is a big loss. And I think that Kim Mulkey is going to have to find another coach who is a good recruiter so they can find someone who can help her sell the LSU brand, sell her system, sell the promise of them competing for national championships and going on deep runs through the tournament. Because Redis did a pretty good job of you know, connecting with the players and the people around them and selling LSU for them and giving Kim Mulkey, helping her get some talented rosters that can compete for titles.
Real quick, Reed, is he going to return and finish the season at LSU, or do you think he stays at Rutgers?
I don't know for sure yet, but I would imagine that he can spend a couple weeks here doing double duty. You know, if you think about it, the transfer portal doesn't open until after the national title game this year, so that helps coaches in his position. They don't necessarily have to have that crunch that other coaches have had in the past, where they're trying to coach in the tournament and build out their roster for next year.
All right, Reed, we'll get back to work on your Sacramento entertainment. I'm sure there's – actually, I've covered an NCAA tournament in Sacramento. It's a pretty cool town. Nice capital. Cool downtown. So have a good time out in Sacramento if LSU goes out there. And thanks for joining us, and we will be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Thanks to Reed Darcy for joining us, and we're going to update you right now on the LSU baseball game against Creighton going on out at Alex Box. What's the score, Todd?
So we're in the top of the third with one out. So Creighton's batting. They're up 2-1, bases loaded right now, and LSU's on their third pitcher of the game.
Creighton is up 2-1?
With yes. bases loaded.
With the bases loaded.
About to be the fourth pitcher of the night.
And who has pitched so far for the Tigers?
Reagan Ricken started, and then Dax Daith
mm-hmm.
went in relief, did not even record an out. And now Ethan Plogg has gotten himself into quite the trouble here.
So he's still in there?
He's getting pulled as we speak.
Oh, okay. All right.
Base is loaded, one out.
Well.
LSU's got three hits so far tonight.
Gosh.
One error.
Wow. They got to get over
that. They've also stranded many, many times already.
Five.
Well, at least they got some traffic on the bases.
And Maverick Rizzi is coming in.
Oh, okay.
So not ideal because these are – yeah, Ethan Plogg and Maverick Rizzi are both guys you would think they were going to try and save at least for SEC play here. But
well, they're not going to – you know, they're saving Gavin Guidry for sure, I would think. But it's still 3 days away. Turning back to women's basketball, Andre, where do you see the Tigers going in the NCAA tournament? Which regional?
I would agree with Reed. I think they're going to go to Sacramento strictly for the sole fact that Ole Miss went one and done.
But don't they have the first two games at home, though?
They do.
Okay, so if they win those two games, right. You think they're going to go to Sacramento as well?
That is true, yeah. Because Ole Miss, and actually, I really do believe that this UCLA, I mean, to be the best, you're going to have to beat the best. That's what they always say. But, you know, like Mulkey said, when they won the national championship in 22.
They didn't beat the best that year.
No, but you have to, you know, but you have to get.
Well,
of course,
you could say they did.
You know, you have to get a little bit of luck, and so for them to get a little bit of luck is going to be needed. And you know, I don't think that UCLA matchup is really their friend, especially after matching up against them the last 2 years, and especially in a year where they really just they don't have the bigs that they usually do down low. Lauren Betts is really really dominant, and I think. There is a strong possibility with women's basketball this year with it being so heavily, I guess, talented, especially from the SEC. Right now their prediction is I think they have Kentucky in the same bracket as them. That's a team that really could knock off UCLA in my eyes.
And where is the women's Final Four?
It's in Phoenix this year.
It's in Phoenix, okay. So if the women get to Phoenix, Todd and I will be covering the team there, Andre. We appreciate your coverage so far, but you're not traveling.
Right. Business is business, I guess.
Who would do your radio reports if you were in Phoenix? So that's what
that's why.
Said.
I don't know, guys. I think we can make it work.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting because, you know, LSU has been close all year, you know, and sometimes things just kind of flip in the NCAA tournament. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I said, this year I expect a lot more parity than we've seen in the past couple of years. I don't know about you, Todd, but I mean that the SEC is no joke this year. It really isn't, and you've seen that all year. I mean, Texas, who just won the SEC, got creamed by Vanderbilt a couple weeks ago, and then you know Vanderbilt just got creamed by Ole Miss, who you know it's just everybody's beating up on each other.
Wouldn't it be cool if somebody else beat South Carolina again? And then LSU beat that team and won the
national championship
without having to beat South Carolina. That would be cool.
It would be funny if that happened, and I wouldn't rule it out.
But, you know, and not to contradict what you just said, Andre, because I think there's a lot of truth in that, and you do see the Ole Misses beating the Vanderbilts, and there have been some other upsets, especially in the SEC during the course of the year. But I think South Carolina, UConn, UCLA, Texas, LSU – That's the cream of the crop.
It is. It is.
And the cream of the crop usually rises to the top. So.
Wow, that rhymes.
Yeah, I know.
Well, not only that, but you just saw number 2 UCLA beat number 9 Iowa in the Big Ten Championship by 50 points. I mean, that is, there is a big difference in those teams. But I do think the SEC is a lot better than the Iowas and the Michigans out there. So that could be me being biased.
Iowa lost by 50 points?
50 points in the conference championship game.
God, was Caitlin at the game?
No.
Jeez, boy,
they could have used her.
They miss her, man. All right, well, you can tell we're out of guests right now. We're just kind of winging it here. But we got one more segment. We're going to take one more break. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. Bad news from Alex Box in the top of the third, or going into the bottom of the third, Creighton 4, LSU 1. Still early, though. Still early in the season, though, too. But not good news.
Not good.
From Alex Box.
They're not the only ones losing. Vanderbilt is also losing to Indiana State, 6-3.
Does Larry Bird play for Indiana State?
He did play for Indiana State.
We are at the Super Chevy Dealer Studio right now. I want to thank our guests, Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball, Rudy Macklin, the great forward for LSU on the 1980-81 Final Four team, the greatest team in LSU basketball history. Todd Walker on the 1993 National Championship team, and Baton Rouge Advocate women's basketball writer Reed Darcy. You can listen to tonight's show in full at your
Kindle.
Favorite place to I mentioned Kindle.
I didn't hear. Sorry.
Okay. Well, why don't you listen, pal?
I should.
Listen right. To your favorite where you listen to your favorite podcast, or you can get it on the Tiger Rag website or YouTube. Should be up shortly after the show. The LSU men's basketball team plays at 11:30 a.m. tomorrow against Kentucky to kick off the SEC men's basketball tournament in Nashville. And Tiger Rag will have coverage of that as soon as the game ends. And let's see. We will also be covering the baseball series at Vanderbilt this weekend. Not in person, but we'll be covering that. Going in, and we'll have the report on the Creighton game tonight, and we're wrapping up the show. Anything else, guys?
Well, you know, every day on TigerRag.com, there's always 6 to 8, at least, fresh, new, original content articles that...
Yes, and get your money issue around Baton Rouge right now at the Tiger Rag newsstands for free. Great issue, one of our best issues, I think. Great job by Mr. Todd Horn, financial wizard. Probably might get you a job at LSU, man.
I don't think that's something.
They need some help over there crunching the numbers, man.
I believe it or not, I'm not looking for a job.
And, Andre, what other scores do you have?
Let's see. I had scores. Coastal Carolina, number 16, is putting number 12, Wake Forest, on upset alert, 10-4. Tulane. In-state Tulane is beating number 3 Mississippi State 4-2 right now. Ole Miss is knotted with number 7 Southern Miss 1-1, and that is about it for now.
And LSU trails Creighton in the first ever game with Creighton 4-1 at Alex Box Stadium. They'll be at Vanderbilt this weekend. Jay Johnson has a press conference tomorrow to set up the SEC opening weekend series, and if LSU loses tonight, it's not going to be a fun press conference, man.
There might just be one, Jay, which would be tonight.
Yeah, that's right. Jay's getting tired of those press conferences, I can tell. But all right, well, that was a good show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will be back next week, same time, same bat channel, on Tiger Rag Radio. Have a good evening.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.